This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Welcome to the Big Orange Wagon Podcast alongside Tyler Milner, executive producer of The Drive on Sports Radio 610 every day from 2 to 6 p.m. I am Patrick Creighton, host of Area 45, 8 to midnight. Well, not every night, but handful of nights now as we're into football season here on Sports Radio 610. And time to bring you all things Houston Astros. You know, early in the season, T-Mill, we made a big deal out of nobody gets off the mat. Like the Houston Astros.
Hell yeah, bro. I'll never forget you saying that. That was beautiful.
It's something that I beat into everybody's head back in April and May. Nobody gets off the mat like the Houston Astros. Mm-hmm. Well, what if I told you?
this week's 30 for 30.
What if I told you that the team with the biggest division lead in the American League is your Houston Astros?
Well, you'd probably be flirting with danger, causing a little southern blood flow for me, because that sounds pretty damn good to me.
Are you going to have to not be able to stand up because you got to hide everything going on under the desk?
Yeah, you know, tuck in the waistband or something, I don't know, but that's freaking beautiful, man. It is September. We are approaching mid-September, so just to hear you say that, whether you already knew it or not, that's a beautiful thing, because the Astros just do what the Astros do year in and year out. We'd love to see it.
Dude, are you packing right now or what, Aaron?
Yeah. Is that a coin purse, or are you just happy to see me?
4.5 games ahead of the Coffee Sippers, 5 in the loss column, only 19 games to go for your Houston Astros, 18 for Seattle. And as we take a look at the rest of the season, the Astros open up a 3-game series with the Oakland A's tonight. Although, to be fair, since August 1st, they have not been ass. Actually, they have been one of the top three teams in the American League since that time. Now, they are one of three teams in the American League with a winning record since that time. One of the others, of course, is your Houston Astros. Then they go to Disneyland for 3 with the drug dealers. Then they go south for 3 with the Fat Friars in San Diego. Come back home, 4 with the drug dealers of Disney, 3 with the Seattle Coffee Sippers, and then go to Cleveland for 3 to end the season.
We're coming up on it, man. End of the regular season is approaching way faster than I expected.
Combined winning percentage, .483 for the Astros' 3 opponents, although they will face the Angels 7 times. So I would say it's 3. It's their 1-2.
So they're
6 opponents. They have 6 opponents, but 2 of them are the A-Los.
Right. So they're playing overall. They're playing a .500 baseball schedule for the remainder of this regular season.
A little less. You got 6 games against teams with 80 wins, 3 games against teams with 70 wins, and 10 games against teams with under 65 wins.
I love how, pulling back the curtain real quick for anyone listening out there, you Astros fans, I love how your names for the different Major League Baseball teams, people in the rundown we have, in our rundown for this podcast, it's typed out that way. I thought maybe it would just be the normal names that you just have it memorized, but nope. There's the Junk Grabbers, there's the Slumlords, but there it is. Regular season's ticking away.
Seattle, right now, now has two at home with the Fat Friars of San Diego. Then they will welcome in the Arlington Junkgrabbers for four. Mm-hmm. And then the South Bronx Slumlords go to Seattle for three. They will then go to Arlington for three. They come here to Houston for three before going back home to finish the season against the Oakland Ass. Their combined winning percentage, 513. So the Coffee Sippers, with a tougher schedule than the Houston Astros, they also have to play two teams with at least 80 wins, and then, of course, the Houston Astros, who will have 80 wins by the time that series starts. So once upon a time, we looked at that series between the Astros and the Coffee Sippers as, man, the Astros need to put themselves in position where they win those three games at home, and they, you know, solidify the division. Those three games are now not needed for the Astros. They are needed by the Coffee Sippers.
My, how the turntables. You love to see it.
And this is, you know, part the big swing here, really, since June 1st. The Astros have played at, you know, 100 win pace, and well, the Coffee Sippers, they've been sipping on coffee and having what happens when you drink too much coffee, which is grabbing onto the toilet seat and trying not to rocket into space.
Crapping all over themselves and waving their stupid trident around. That's basically it.
So the Astros sitting in really strong position in the AL West to win this division. And win it pretty handily. By handily, I mean five games or more. They're going to win this division by, and it's very, very possible those three games in Cleveland will be moot for both teams.
Yeah, true. And correct me if I'm wrong, PC. I guess I could just Google it real quick. But right now, as it stands on September 10th, Tuesday, Astros four and a half games up in the West.
Four and
right?
a half up, five and a loss.
Yes. Okay. So that's a good place to be in. I mean, just given everything you've gone through this year, it's kind of a miracle to some extent, but then again, it's not, because this is just what the Stros do year in and year out. Seven effing times, like JV said.
Yeah, this is, look, there's a reason why the ALCS has been renamed the Astros Invitational.
Oh, yes, I love that. I want to get like gear made, like hats and shirts that literally say that instead of ALCS. That would be fun.
Do you know somebody who does any kind of artwork or anything?
I do.
Well, then
I'm going to be all over it.
If you know the artwork, I know the manufacturer, and we can get a little something.
Let us gingerly touch our tips and combine our brain power
with our, Wonder Twin Powers Activate, and have the Astros Invitational with the big orange wagon put together, and we can have a little something special for the end of the year for all the Wagoners.
Oh, that's a good tease right there. I'm interested.
Be a lot of fun. Now, the biggest question everybody's got right now, and we still have roughly 19 games to figure this out, is Justin Verlander versus Spencer Arrietty.
Facts, bro. This is stressing me out, legitimately.
It is amazing to me how Ronel Blanco basically has just been cast aside, like he doesn't even exist.
Yeah, they're like, hey, just go to the bullpen, dude. We know you kicked ass all year, but get out of here. that no-hitter was awesome, yes, but get to the bullpen, Blanco.
So here's Ronel Blanco, who, I mean, look, is he pitching as well as he did the beginning of the year? No. Is his velocity down? Yes. Yeah. Is he still going out there and getting five innings and keeping the Astros in the game? Yeah, he is.
Yeah, grown man-ish.
But look, when you have a guy who's a future Hall of Famer like Justin Verlander, there is a really high percentage chance that he is going to be in the postseason rotation. Unless he is absolutely sucking the wind out of everything.
Which he is currently doing.
Since he's come off the IL.
Damn it, old man.
In four starts, he's got a .9. Wait, let me read this one more time. A .968 ERA over the four starts since coming off the IL. And the worst part about it is they've gotten progressively worse.
Yeah.
So his first start off the IL was against the Red Sox, good offensive team. Five innings, two earned, four hits, a walk, and six Ks. Okay, pretty solid outing.
Yeah, take it.
His next outing was in Philadelphia against another excellent offensive team.
Mm-hmm.
Five innings, four earned, seven hits, a walk, and three Ks. it's a tough team to play in their ballpark. It's a bandbox. Gave up a cheapy homer. Took an L.
Mm-hmm.
Then last Monday in Cincinnati, and that's a bandbox, he got squeezed like hell in the first inning.
That's true. I remember that.
4 2/3, 5 earned, 8 hits, 4 walks, 3 strikeouts to 107 pitches.
God, in that little innings, that hurts. That hurts.
That was his season high.
Oh.
107 pitches. Last time out against the Arizona Diamondbacks, he didn't make it to the fourth.
That start I remember vividly.
3 innings, 8 earned runs, 8 hits, 2 homers, walked 1, did not strike out a batter.
Yeah.
The idea of Justin Verlander not getting a single strikeout is wild to me.
Oh, yeah. I think I heard it. I can't quote it exactly, PC, but I know at one point it was like the second or third inning for Verlander, and I heard the play-by-play guy, whoever it was, they said something to the effect of Verlander to this point in the game has 2 swings and misses.
He only had 4 swings and misses out of 75 pitches.
Oh, that's atrocious, as JV would say himself.
14 cold strikes, 4 swings and misses, 11 foul balls. It, like, everything, every numerical statistic about that start is terrible. And when you go back and look at, you know, what was he doing? Okay, so very first inning, fastball 93, curve 77, slider 87, changeup 85. You like the changeup to be 10 miles an hour slower than the fastball, was 8. I had a couple of fastballs at 94. His velocity is not the issue.
Mm-mm.
It's not that he is, oh my gosh, his fastball is down to like 91 miles an hour. This is not the issue.
Mm-mm.
It is his location. His location is off, and it's off badly.
Yeah.
And he has said it's a mechanical issue.
We've heard him say before, but he's usually fixed it a lot faster than this.
Yes,
almost cursed.
Yes.
I'm telling you, I'm stressed out over here.
The positive part of this is the velocity says he's not injured. The velocity says his shoulder doesn't hurt, his neck doesn't hurt, his elbow doesn't hurt. The results say he's not executing.
Yeah.
And I think if you watch these games more closely and you look at the pitches that he's giving up hits on, that he, you know, guys are making contact on, they're not pitches where, like they're not where he wants them, and they're not as crisp. So for an example, in the first inning, first batter ripped a line drive off a slider that didn't have the sharp break to it, got way too much of the plate. Second batter hit a curveball that had way too much of the plate. Then he hit a guy with a curveball, changeup that was like belly button high. That's not where his changeup goes.
Mm-mm.
And you just look at the locations of where his pitches are, and you're just looking at him and going, okay, he's not executing, number one. Number two, he's just not getting that sharpness. So, for example, he gave up an RBI single in the third off a 96-mile-an-hour fastball that was supposed to be at the top of the zone.
Velo was there.
And instead, it was like 2 inches above your waist.
Yeah. Right in that that red zone you don't want to be in.
Yeah, and you know, when you're throwing that kind of heat, the higher it goes, the harder it is to hit.
Mm-hmm.
He gave up the home run, you know, gave up a grand slam on a 95-mile-an-hour fastball.
Velo was there again.
But it was belt high.
Wow.
This is a pitch that's supposed to be at the top of the zone, and he put it.
The high cheese.
Middle in.
Yeah.
I mean, you're giving him a hair. You know what? I'm going to give you a high velocity.
You're putting it on a T-form.
But I'm going to put it in a spot that's easiest for you to catch it.
Yeah.
He's not executing where he needs to execute.
Which we never see from this guy. That's why I am so freaking stressed out.
So the reason I'm not stressed out is because once he figures out the mechanic, it's going to turn quickly.
And I want to believe that, and I do believe that to an extent, PC, but I can't remember ever seeing it last this long. Like, he's a pitcher like anyone, and he's one of the best we've ever seen at making adjustments, at going into the lab, you know, between starts, working his ass off at the mechanics, at every single little detail of his time on a mound. I have never seen for Justin Verlander these kind of struggles, these kind of hiccups and mess ups and lack of location. I've never seen it last this long.
No, it's lasted four starts. But at the same time, when he's 41 and he's missed half a season.
Yeah.
And maybe it just takes a little longer to figure it out because of the injuries that he's had. But I also feel like if he can show you he's got it figured out before the end of the season, he's going to be the fourth starter in the postseason.
Oh, and I agree with that 100%, and I co-sign it, and I would want that. My concern right now, today, September 10th, is he going to reach that? Is he going to reach any semblance of okay, you know, Verlander's figured something out. He's got the mechanics. So, like, I'm not saying he's got to go out there and be, you know, 2019 Justin Verlander or anything, 2015 Justin Verlander. God, guy's getting old. But if he doesn't show like he hasn't so far in four starts since returning to the Astros with the injury, he's 0-4, people. Justin Verlander has started four games since returning to the Astros off that, whatever it was, neck, whatever, he was out for a month or two. He's had four starts. He is 0-4 in these starts, and they haven't been pretty. There's been some little moments, like you mentioned, PC. You know, he was squeezed a couple of starts ago. There's been some, like, BS hits that have just found their way into, you know, falling down into the outfield right over the infield. I'm not saying there hadn't been a little bad luck, but this guy has not looked good, and there hasn't been any sign of it getting better, and that's why I'm freaking out. But if we do see it, I think you're absolutely right. I think he is and should be that fourth starter for the Houston Astros.
And look, you have essentially 4 weeks to figure it out, right? You've got 4 weeks, so figure four starts. In those four starts, I'd like to see at least two of them be better Verlander starts.
That'd be nice.
Where he's at least five innings, two runs or less, handful of strikeouts, not a lot of walks, not giving up bombs. Give me two starts like that at the end of the year. And I feel pretty confident because of the velocity. If his velocity was down, I'd be worried.
Yes, that's a great point.
Right now, I'm not that worried. I feel like he can get it figured out. But really, the next two starts for him, he's really got to figure it out.
Yeah.
Because the other side of that coin is going to be Spencer Arrighetti.
Woo.
So here's a guy who in August was the Rookie of the Month. First time the Astros have had a pitcher as Rookie of the Month since Colin McHugh in 2014.
That is a hell of a stat. That is a name I haven't heard in quite some time.
I mean, think about all the rookie pitchers who have come up between Fromber and so Javier many. And Urquidy, you know,
Hunter Brown.
And this, he's the first one to be the pitcher of the month rookie for the Astros in a decade.
That's wild. Colin McHugh is not a name I expected to hear on this Tuesday evening.
Hey,
I love
busting
it.
Curves. That's everything that goes on, right? Busting curves.
Yeah.
But Spencer Arrighetti had a 1.95 ERA.
He was cruising, dude.
In the month of August. He was tremendous.
And then?
Well, and then the Astros decided they were not going to play defense behind him for
true,
a day.
True.
Where, what did they make? I think they're credited with three errors.
But it could have been like five.
It could have been five. Like, legit could have been five.
Yeah, that's not us being facetious out there, Stros fans. It very easily could have been five.
So, Arrighetti, who in his last start against Cincinnati only lasted two-thirds of an inning. He threw 38 pitches.
Damn, that's
he bad. Allowed nine runs, but only three earned.
Yeah, which they doubled back on and corrected, if I'm not mistaken.
So it was a weird game because first it was an error, then it was not an error,
right.
Then it's an error again.
Which I always find so interesting. Like, who's the slap, as Bajani would say? Who's the slap at these ballparks that's, like, sitting up somewhere? Like, I just visualize some dude up in, like, a suite or something, and whenever there's a close call, someone comes to him and he's just like, yeah, I'll call it an error.
Usually,
like, who are these people?
Usually you get a little home cooking, right?
Right, so, right, for sure.
If it's questionable, they'll give you a hit.
Right.
All right. But this particular play by Jeremy Pena, where he just flat out whiffed on a ball that he should have had, that he probably has 999 times out of 1,000, opened the floodgates. They should have been out of the inning with three runs.
Yeah.
Instead, five hits, a homer, three walks, and Spencer Arrighetti, who had been absolutely blowing guys away with 47 Ks in his previous 32 and a third innings, doesn't have a single strikeout.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, before we move off of this, because it pisses me off royally, and I just looked it up, and now I'm even more angry. Jeremy Pena is leading the Astros in 2024 with 19 errors.
You wanna get ticked off even more?
19? I knew Pena's glove had been struggling, but the closest other Astro was Bregman with 9.
Usually your shortstop will lead your team in errors.
That's but fair, but
for
damn.
A guy who, you know, won the gold glove, you know, his rookie season, he has regressed back to back years defensively. And you know, you're, oh well, you know, he's got he's got 19 errors and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I think 9 of them have come in the last 5 weeks.
I think you're right. No, I think you're right. It's been an S storm of errors for shortstop Jeremy Pena lately. It's maddening. But I did not know we were at 19. I mean, that's not I'm not saying it's the craziest thing I've ever seen on a stat sheet before, but good Lord.
Now look, a hot close to the month could go a long way for Pena.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, he's hitting .269. Well, that would be the best average he'd had over a full season.
Yeah.
He's got a .309 on base, which is honestly horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Better than his rookie year, worse than last year. Slugging is .403. Better than last year, worse than his rookie year. There hasn't been an upward trajectory.
Yeah.
For him offensively, and there's been a downward trajectory for him defensively. And this is just, you know, part of Jeremy Pena's career arc so far, which we can get into that another day, because I wanted to get into, you know, this idea of Verlander and Arrighetti. Now Arrighetti had a great month in August, and then he gets, you know, smashed. I don't want to say smashed because, you know, like I said,
because of the gloves,
holes and gloves all over the field.
Mm-hmm.
But he needs to come back with a strong effort tonight. And if he is ultimately, let's say Justin Verlander cannot figure out what his mechanical issues are.
That would be
Spencer Arrighetti is very much going to be in the mix to have that fourth starter spot. And you want him to finish the month strong going into the postseason. He's not a future Hall of Famer, you know, 18-year veteran. Yeah. Everything for him is uncharted territory. So you need to see Arrighetti is pitching well if you're going to have him in the mix. The reality is, even though he's had bullpen experience, right now, I think Rinel Blanco should be the guy we're talking about as the fourth starter, with Arrighetti maybe working in tandem.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
And you know what?
What?
If JV can get himself straightened out, it'll be JV. If he can't get himself straightened out, it is very reasonable to think JV will not make the postseason roster.
Which will be if and when that day comes and that happens, VC. That is, I mean, first of all, it would be sad and it would suck because this is your Hall of Fame veteran arm in Houston. But, I mean, that would be a like stop traffic kind of moment on the baseball diamond for the Houston Astros as a fan for me. I mean, that could very well be a sign of the beginning of the end, not to be too dramatic, but as we've stated, he's not getting any younger.
No, and you know what? If JV can't figure it out, do you bring him back next year? Do you give him a low salary with a lot of bonus opportunity and say, hey, well, you know, we'll give you a $7 million salary, and then we'll give you, say, a $500,000 for every game you start.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you stay within this, if you win this many games, here's a bonus. And if you finish in, like, 50 innings, here's a bonus. 100 innings, here's a bonus. 150 innings, here's a bonus. If you qualify for the ERA title and you're in the top 10, here's a bonus. And you bonus the hell out of them, because I don't know. Again, the velocity is there, but the...
Which is good, which you like.
The execution is not.
Yeah, which you don't like, which is very bad. I mean, it's a hell of a situation the Astros find themselves in. They've done so damn good in 2024, managing this plethora of injuries to the arms and somehow finding themselves 4.5 games up in the AL West. But at some point, you need healthy arms and you need arms to be what you've seen in the past. And right now, Justin Verlander, while seemingly healthy, not the Verlander we know.
Now, the Astros tonight put out a lineup that looks like it very well could be a postseason type lineup.
Yeah, I saw your tweet. I like that.
So Altuve, Yordan in left, Tucker DH as they work Tucker back in. Bregman, Yiner at first base, Pena, Caratini, Jake in center, Chaz in right.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this is the kind of lineup we could see them use in the postseason, where they're, you know, first base and catcher are split between Yiner and Caratini. Mm-hmm. Those two guys have hit better than anybody else they've put at first base all year long. You're looking for, you know, Kyle Tucker to get healthy and be able to play right field eventually. But for right now, he's DHing, so Yordan's in left. And the only two things you could really look at and say, well, what about this? What about that? Maybe you flip Pena and Caratini, and maybe you flip Chazzy and Jake. As Chaz has had the bat since he's been called back up, and Jake's still trying to find it, that if Chaz can show you he is hitting like last year's Chaz, mm-hmm. I think he moves up into the he moves up in the lineup.
Yeah, and this last week or two, Chaz has been getting those reps we've been wanting, those more regular, to an extent, reps out in the outfield in a spot as lineup, and I think it's paying dividends for old Chaz. We're all rooting for him.
Something to think about. If Chaz continues to hit and Jake goes into the tank, Ben Gamel plays every day, Chaz goes to center field.
Dude, Gamel, I feel like I'm almost... It feels like I've been overstating it a bit because I haven't seen a whole lot of other people, you know, really talking about this Gamel kid much. And not that they should, and not that I'm like some sports freaking genius, baseball genius, but I am so impressed with this Gamel kid since he joined the Astros. I mean, it's felt like, anyway, I need to go look at his stat sheet, but it feels like since Campbell's been a Houston Astro, I mean, all this guy does is get base hits.
Now, look, for his career, he is essentially a league average player for
right.
his career, right? Career, 253 hitter, about league average, 334 on base, about league average, 718 OPS, about league average,
which is why he was available.
You know, he's a guy who's, you know, only one time in his career has he had 500 at bats, and it was 2017. Mm. So he's a guy who's been a part timer. He doesn't have a ton of home run power. He hits some doubles, but he doesn't have a ton of power. He doesn't steal a ton of bases. He does draw some walks.
Mm-hmm.
He does draw some walks.
He's a lunch pail guy,
and
in a sense.
He's a league average defender. But sometimes when you get a guy like that off the scrap heap out of nowhere, you catch a little lightning in a bottle.
Uh-huh.
You don't need him to be great all year long. You just need him to be at his best essentially for 2 months.
Yes.
And since joining the Astros, and again, small sample size, 51 at-bats, 294, 400 on base, 812 OPS. When you come to a new team and you hit like that, you're going to play. So
I'll take those numbers every day of the week for this guy. I had zero expectations for whenever he was brought into Houston.
Right now, there is opportunity between Jake and Chaz, and it feels like this is the story like every year, right? There's opportunity yeah. between Jake and Chaz for one of those guys to seize everyday playing time by hitting.
Yeah,
they're both great defenders. Jake is a little bit better defensively as
Agreed.
Far as able to run things down. Probably has, neither one of them have a great arm. But
that's fair.
Chaz also is the guy who we saw make a historic World Series catch.
One we'll so never we forget. Know, yeah.
We know he can go fetch it.
Mm-hmm.
Which if one of those guys gets hot, they're going to play because Joe is going to find a way to keep Gamel, who's been hitting, in the lineup.
Who's it going to be, boys? Who's going to heat up? Who's going to grab that wood? Pause. And go
you
to
just
work for
really
the
wanted to say grab the wood, baby.
I didn't even mean to. Who's going to do it? Come
Who's
on, Jake.
Who's going to swing that bat?
I mean, Chaz, I will hand deliver banana pudding to you every day if you will start stroking with that bat, my
Can
friend.
Can we get Chick-fil-A to give the banana pudding shake.
God, I still haven't tried that.
To Chaz every single day. Just every day they're home, somebody from Chick-fil-A needs to go deliver Chaz a banana pudding shake. Just go do it.
I think that's a tremendous idea, and it is the home of what they call the Lord's Chicken, so it seems like the right thing to do.
Dude, it is the Lord's Chicken.
It is.
It is so the good. Golden goodness of the Lord himself.
It is. I feel like every time I take a bite of Chick-fil-A, I just instantly hear Creed jamming out in the background because it's so close to the Lord, you know?
Understand. I grew up without Chick-fil-A. I did not have it.
Okay, so I did too, kind of, really. My family did not partake.
When I moved down here and they had Chick-fil-A, which I'd only had one time in my life in Maryland.
You saw God?
I saw, oh my gosh, they have Chick-fil-A.
You saw the pearly gates.
And my wife, my kids, they'd never had Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
I stopped at Chick-fil-A, like, what's here? And I'm like, glorious. And we went inside and they were like, this is the greatest thing ever. So, yes.
The chicken's golden like the pearly gates, and it tastes like heaven.
The great things about being here in Houston, we have Chick-fil-A.
Yeah,
we also have Cane's.
Oh, I love Cane's.
We also have Frenchies.
Frenchies is also great.
Like we have so many amazing options of, wait, we do what with chicken? Yeah, we do, baby. Yeah, we do.
Oh, man. All those places you just named, I could go in on right now.
Going to have to hit up every single one of them for some marketing funds right now. But that is going to do it for our Big Orange Wagon podcast for today. We'll be back later on in the week with another episode of the Big Orange Wagon podcast, keeping you up to date on all things Houston Astros as we get down the home stretch to the postseason. He is Tyler Milner, executive producer of The Drive, with Stern and Hughley every day on Sports Radio 610 from 2 to 6 p.m. I'm Patrick Creighton, host of Area 45. You catch me 8 to midnight during the week on Sports Radio 610. Until next time, let's go Astros.
All aboard and choo-choo, MFers. I said, train,